This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The ride of your life is Eddie Hood.
For those of you who cannot wait and love Daddy Hood, please head over to our Patreon. We have exclusive access to episodes, we have early access to episodes, and we have behind the scenes footage. Head on over there, sign up, be part of the exclusive Daddy Hood group, and join us over there.
All right, welcome back to Daddy Hood, Path to Parenthood. I'm so excited. This next guest needs no introduction. I have no note cards, no bio, no anything. Good luck. Welcome, my husband.
Hi, babe.
Jordan C. Brown. I know you're so sad that we don't get to play the theme music.
I love your theme song. It's so good.
It's the best part of the podcast. Not me, not my guests. It's the song.
Debate. I mean, it's all A+.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me turn our office into the studio.
The dogs hate it, but I don't mind it at all.
I know. So as you know, I'm working on my dad jokes. I feel like I'm going to be the one that's going to have to give them dad jokes because you're going to have probably actually good jokes. So with that being said, it's joke time.
Okay.
Here we go. Jordan, what has hands but can't clap?
A clock.
You're so good. That was like a riddle. That wasn't even a dad joke.
All right. Well, I'm excited to fill everybody in on everything. So one of the first topics and conversations that we bonded over was our want and desire to become fathers.
For sure.
So we decided to get started. And I know, and I've talked openly on the podcast about my experience of going into California Fertility Partners and like getting the ball rolling and how overwhelming it was, and also how it's taken now 2 years to get to the point where we're at. Well, what's your experience been like?
My experience with fertility has been, I think it would have been more intense had we not had so many other huge life things happening at the same time. We were planning our wedding, then we got married and we remodeled our house, and we were really busy with work and family stuff and travel.
We adopted a dog.
Yeah, and we have two dogs. And so I guess what I was surprised by is, yeah, it took a long time, but how many different pieces of the puzzle there are, and how you, it's sort of like any other thing where you're like a customer, even though it's so personal, where you kind of have to like manage the different pieces of it and be like, hello, haven't heard from you in a couple weeks. What's going on? And some of it's kind of funny, you know, like, yeah, this person, we don't know what happened to them. Like, they never called us back. And you're like, okay, that was going to be our egg donor, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
People are very sweet. It does feel a little clinical and impersonal sometimes, because it's like, there's like, it's where the medical meets like, I don't know, like, almost like the miracle of life.
Yeah.
Which also meets like capitalism and money, and they don't all go together that well. So it's a little bit of a weird thing, but it's also really rewarding.
Yeah. I had Dr. Wingler on, and I remember, cause he was walking through the story where he's basically like, Jordan, you have 50 million sperm. Colton, and I've been telling the story wrong the entire time. By the way, he said I only had five. I only had four. Sperm,
really?
In which three of them were completely moveless or
immotile.
Immobile. So many big words.
Yeah.
And I had one that was like barely wiggling. That would have been our miracle baby. But I mean, I just remember when he broke that news to me. I mean, you were there. You put your hand on my thigh so sweetly and were like there for me. But it was just like, okay. And then moving on. And I'm like,
yeah.
Wait, hold on.
It was like 11 a.m. on a Tuesday.
I know, and I had to take the rest of the day off work because I was just like, I can't.
Well,
do
it's insane. It's everyone. Most people are really ignorant about all fertility stuff, and you know, there are so many things in culture where people associate being like virile. Like, how much sperm you have does not correlate to how manly you are, how masculine you are. But it's sometimes people might think that.
I told him that too. I was like, I thought since I was on testosterone and I was doing all these things that I would have great sperm. Come to find out, everything that I thought was giving me good sperm killed my sperm.
And then you went on alpha sperm.
And I went on alpha sperm. But now I'm on prenatal.
So funny. But good product. So,
I know. Very good. It worked. All right. I think just I want to back up. So I recently come out. We get together. And I say, hey, I want to become a dad. What was your initial reaction?
Well, I always wanted to have kids too. And I don't know. It just never felt fast with you. Even though it sort of was. I think, you know, everyone around us who mattered to us was like, you guys are doing great. You know, we were engaged for a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't that fast. I mean, it was fast, but I think also until we transferred the embryo in last week, it wasn't, you know, there are lots of people who preserve their fertility options, right? You freeze sperm, you like maybe get an egg donor, and like even making embryos, they could be frozen indefinitely.
Right.
So there was something that felt really different about, we have a surrogate, she's amazing, her husband's amazing, we're doing this, the embryo's going in, you know, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point, because most straight couples who are going through this, at any moment, the girl can walk in and be like, hey, I want to use and thaw out one of my embryos and put it in.
Yeah.
We have to be very strategic and have a team of people that sign off on it. Dude, I mean, we have to have a surrogate, and then we have to have a doctor and a lawyer and all of the legal team to review it.
Yeah.
It's a very intentional and a process.
But it's stressful. Like, I was just with someone the other day who he and his wife were trying for a really long time. They had a baby with IVF, and then they were sort of thinking about trying to have a second kid. She had been told she couldn't get pregnant naturally. And so she, one day, basically was like, I feel like I'm pregnant. And she was like 20 weeks pregnant.
Wow.
Because she had just given up the thought of even thinking it. So I don't know. I just think that it's an intense process for people. No matter who you are, it can be stressful.
I think it's important for people to also know that you're not a very public person. So that was an interesting thing that we had to work through in our relationship. I feel like we've done a good job.
Yeah, me too.
You've made me better at pulling back and not being as open of a book.
Well, I knew what I was signing up for, and you've helped a lot of people by being public, by documenting your coming out, and now by being open about this. So I think there's a time and a place where being public is really great.
Yeah.
And then there are other times when it's like, let's just have that be our thing.
Yeah.
It's worked really well.
Yeah. So let's talk about the first day that we went in, because I think there was a moment, a jarring moment for both of us.
Where
I've said this before, but we went through it. We get into this, you know, we get my sperm results, we get yours. We freeze yours that day. We don't freeze mine because I have to improve. But then we get rushed over to this. Do you remember this?
Notary public.
We get public notary.
Yeah.
We get rushed over into this like little room with a notary, and they're like, here, sign this. And it's a book of papers. And on those papers, my little detail oriented stud, you went through meticulously every single.
Well, so did you. Yeah. We were led through them by, and it, of course, like California is a really good state for fertility, and there are amazing pioneering people who have made this a really safe place to be able to build a family, no matter what your family looks like. And they've thought of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, people take this really seriously. And I think sometimes there's this misconception that it's like, no one cares or something about like, oh, you're just making an embryo and freezing it. And some people feel really weird about the ethics of that. I actually was impressed by how thoughtful they were and how thoughtful the law is around that. Mm-hmm. So it was like, if something happens to you, Jordan, and you know, but Colton survives, what happens to the embryos? And like, if vice versa.
Do you remember what all of our answers were for that?
I think basically, because I think it was so instinctive, like, you know,
we're trusting each other with
all
of our.
And then if it was like, if you both die, then I think it was like, you know, our parents could decide, but like, we're not going to have
our parents raise random, like,
well, yeah, they wouldn't even be, they would just be in, you know,
yeah,
frozen somewhere.
Totally.
But yeah, I remember it. It is intense. And I think there's no way to not have it be intense. And everyone is really nice, but it is, you sort of just have to like put on your big boy pants and like
go for it.
Do a bunch of stuff that is uncomfortable.
With and on the conversation of privacy and us being different people and how we operate, what all are we going to share? What all are we going to talk about? I mean, we know our genders.
You didn't have a list of questions or something?
No, I didn't prepare anything for this. I just wanted to talk to you.
So. I'm happy to share anything. I don't have any, like, I think it's been beautiful. I mean, I think, so, you know, you go into this clinical setting where everyone's really nice and you have to, like, go into a private room and, like, give a sperm sample. You know, yes, it was disappointing, I think, when you got that news that you had a low sperm count, but our doctor was so wonderful. He was like, there are things you can do.
Four.
Okay.
That's not even low. That's like nothing.
But, you know, in the same breath, he was like, don't worry about it. It's okay. This happens. There are things you can do to improve your sperm count and sperm health. And we learned about it. And there was a supplement you could take. And there were lifestyle changes you could make. And it works.
Yeah. And Dr. Ringler actually said something really interesting. He goes, it's really good for the other partner to be there. Because I remember, too, you held me very accountable. We made a lot of changes for me. And you basically were just like, you're going to have to make some sacrifices in the short term.
Yeah, but you did it on your own, too. I think ever since I met you, you talked about wanting to become a father.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we froze our sperm and then we looked at different agencies.
Mm-hmm.
We got so much advice from friends and who were really great and said, let me sort of tell you the things I learned and the things that went wrong for me. And one friend recommended this concierge service called Donor Concierge. And we talked to them and they have relationships with many big agencies for both egg donors and surrogates. And so we hired them and then met with them to talk about the qualities we would want in an egg donor who's going to genetically be half of, you know, these babies we bring into the world and raise. So it's like a really big decision.
Yeah. Wait, I want to stop there.
Yeah.
I want to talk people through our process of selecting our egg donor.
Great.
And conversations we had. Because I think a lot of people are curious of like, is it a catalog? Is it a thing? And they have a lot of questions around that. And it essentially is a digital catalog of headshots. And when you click the headshot, it brings up a carousel of photos that has like a quick bio, a medical history report, an education report.
But totally de-identified.
Like
they do a lot of work to protect the privacy of the women who are amazing and sort of offering this.
Yeah, I think it's like the one, I don't even know the one that we went, it was like DCN014. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I think we're on similar pages, but yet different when we were like, what do we want out of an egg donor?
Mm-hmm.
I know like for you, health and education were like two of your top priorities.
Yeah, I think health. And I was always really interested in someone who seemed like curious about the world. Because I felt like that's what I look for in a partner. Like, so somebody who, even if they couldn't afford to travel, like they'd either travel from where they were, or if they couldn't afford to, said like, that's my dream, that I want to do that someday. Sort of had like a personality of like explore and just being curious about the world and not somebody who's kind of like,
yeah. Well, we both have that in common.
Yeah.
Just from our backgrounds and how we grew up.
Yeah.
And then I mean, for me, I obviously, yes, health and education were important, but they weren't like my top two. Mine were more height and physical attributes.
Yeah. And I had to get confronted with that too. You sort of are confronted with your values because in your mind, you're like, yeah, health and like the kid who's going to be really smart and healthy. And then you sort of, when it really comes down to it and you're looking, you're like, can I picture having a baby with you?
Mm.
This person. And it's like, you know, and then we did give some feedback and said, we're, you know, that was appearance based.
Yeah.
And it felt a little weird because it doesn't feel like the most politically correct thing, but I think we were really polite about it and sort of never rude about anyone else, but just saying like, part of me felt like, you know, I would want to somehow be able to like picture.
Yeah.
You know, like if I were, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like more of a feeling.
If you were straight, could you be in a relationship with a girl? Is that how you treated it?
more just like an X Factor. Like, it almost like, it's so weird to say it like this, but like on American Idol, when they'd be like, you have the X Factor or whatever, it's like, just, you know, you're just seeing a screenshot of someone, like a photo.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get to meet her in real life. You don't get to see a video. So it's more of like, I mean, I guess you could also compare it a little bit to like dating apps, where like, obviously you're spending multiple minutes per profile and kind of reading about what these women have to say about why they're doing this, which in some cases is so moving.
Yeah.
And, but just, it comes down to this general feeling. And then again, I gave myself the grace of like, I don't have to like explain it. I just, it's a yes or no. It's like a visceral kind of a thing. But when we found
our first one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. The first one.
She Let's talk really about that. Cool. Because we found the first one, and then we went through everything. And which, by the way, you don't get to see a video, you don't get a ton of information. But when you do move forward with pursuing one, they do a due diligence, and they provide you with even more information, the opportunity to request questions, the opportunity to request a video, potentially even Zoom with her, with her cameras off. So we started pursuing it. But while we're pursuing all of that, in the background, as Dr. Ringler said on his episode, they start the genetic testing then and there, because they want to be able to like advise you, actually, no, this, you guys shouldn't move forward based off your genetics.
Yeah.
And that happened for us.
Yeah. So we had a very cool woman, who actually had a lot in common with the egg donor we ended up with, but had traveled a lot and was really, smart and seemed, I don't know, just really confident.
Yeah.
Which was, and then I found out that I was a carrier. Because we got genetic testing, and then she and I were both carriers for cystic fibrosis.
I know.
Which was a small world, because your foundation was set up to help people with cystic fibrosis. And so if she and I, if absent the genetic testing, if we had moved forward with her, our baby would have had a 1 in 4 chance of having this life-altering disease.
Right.
So
we had to start over.
We had to start over. And there were some that were just so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and funny. Like, some of them were hilarious. I mean, some of the photos were amazing. Like, I mean, you could just see their personality come through.
And also, can we talk about some of the price tags?
Yeah. They never were commensurate, I thought, with like some of the women are like, you're the coolest woman I've ever seen. And her price would be like very low.
Right.
And then someone else who you're like, okay. And then to be like 300 grand. You're like, what?
I know.
And not, no knock, of course, but just sort of like, I mean, it's this weird marketplace.
There's only one university that I kept seeing, Notre Dame. Everybody from Notre Dame wanted to put $400,000, $500,000 on their price tags. Hey, I was like, oof.
You know what? If you can get it.
It's Notre Dame.
School's expensive. Notre Dame's amazing.
No, I know, but it's like, I don't know. It's no Illinois State. It's no Stanford.
Well,
sorry to the people from Notre Dame.
I think Notre Dame, go Fighting Irish. I didn't go there. I don't know why I care so much. Then we found, it took us a while. It took us, that was the longest. It took months.
Yeah. It took months to reset and refocus. And then we found our current egg donor.
By the way, you can choose someone and they're like, sorry, she's not available anymore. Someone else chose her.
Right.
Or
we put a hold on.
She changed her mind.
Yeah,
she's in a relationship and her new partner is not comfortable.
Yes, that came up. I forgot. There's a few that got eliminated, so we went back with the top three and ranked them.
Yeah,
and then the number two, I think it got emailed to us. Actually, she changed she's now in a relationship and has removed herself from the database.
Yeah, which it's just such an evolving thing. And I remember being so moved by this one woman who just seemed amazing. And I remember her, like, her price was really low. And she was married to a trans man.
Yes. Yeah.
And so they were going to have to use, you know, fertility to have kids of their own.
Right.
And she didn't go into detail, but she said that was her motivation for becoming an egg donor. It was because she knows firsthand what it's like to have to do this. And she wanted to help other couples.
Yeah.
The women were amazing. I mean, full stop. The women who are like, you can, and of course, it's a mixture of, you know, you're getting paid. So, like, obviously, there's a component of that, but there are lots of things you can do to make money. And I just was really moved by the way some of them spoke about why they were doing it.
It was beautiful. And most of them had
letters written. We actually prepared a letter.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about that too, because that was one thing that Donor Concierge had us do that I don't think maybe a lot of agencies have you do, but...
I think you have to do it.
Do you have to?
A dear surrogate and dear egg donor. Yeah, before you... Because
yeah.
To make sure both sides kind of match.
So we used... We wrote a letter, just used aliases as our names so that we protected our identity, but...
No one cares who I am, but yeah.
I used an alias. Jordan kept his name the same. And we wrote a letter, and basically we're just like, had an opportunity before we even got to say hi to them to say thank you. Yeah. And we put thank you at the top of the letter. I'll have to find that, because I think I want to read it for people to hear our letter.
It's in the fertility folder on the desktop of our computer, neatly organized, so you can find it.
Got it. You can tell that I did not make the folders, nor do I use the desktop computer in our house.
You do more dishes than I do.
We have our roles.
Exactly.
We play them well. So anyway, yeah, we matched with our egg donor. One thing that was so cool, just like, you know, as much as a bummer and a letdown it was to have you match with our egg donor for cystic fibrosis and have to start over, mm-hmm. It was sort of cool to have the silver lining and be like, it was not even a silver lining, but like just have that moment where I was like, oh, this is full circle. Like I had a foundation that quite literally raised money and resources for people living with CF. And now I have to start over because of it. And I had this moment where I was going to a doctor's office a doctor visit in the same building where our fertility doctor is. They strategically set these appointments up separately so that the intended parents do not ever run into the egg donor. I didn't find this out until I told this story, but it's a big deal. Like they hate that. Mm-hmm. So they said just to protect privacy, they do not want it. So anyway, I'm running late for my doctor's appointment. Somehow, some way, I'm programmed to drive into their fertility parking lot instead of the Cedar Sinai parking lot. So I'm already in the wrong place, running late, have to take this elevator to a different floor than what it's supposed to go to. And I get into the elevator and there is our egg donor.
Yeah.
And she's going to her fertility appointment. I obviously just say hello. I do not say
Well, you held the door for her on the elevator.
I did. Didn't say a word other than hello and gave her a smile. In the back of my mind, I'm like, this is so fucking cool.
Mm. And then you called me and just said, it feels like...
It felt right. It felt real. It felt right. Because I also think like there is a point where it's sort of like this unicorn mythological person, because you like select her and you have this team and you see her lab results and you see all like this data, but you never actually get to see her. And I got to see her.
Well, I think this is a good time to throw in, ladies, we have to all fight on your behalf. Anybody who needs a sperm donor, I should say. When you get an egg donor, you get to see these women as babies, little kids, teenagers, young adults, like every phase of their life.
Mm-hmm.
But women who want sperm donors are not getting that. They just get baby pics.
Right. And we're going to get into that.
So they could get in an elevator with their sperm donor. I have no idea.
Right. And we're going to get into that in a later episode too and elaborate more on that. But it is a little backwards that like that's still the case. Some agencies are changing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll get more into that because something's got to change there.
I'm sure it's because men don't want to provide, you know, photos of themselves as adults. They want anonymity.
Yeah.
And egg donors get paid much, much more than sperm donors. So maybe it all just comes down to capitalism. But yeah.
Oh, how you want to get into capitalism on this podcast?
No, just like if you're getting paid $50,000, like maybe you're more willing to give a photo of yourself than if you're getting paid like $500.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
What else? Yeah. So the egg donor was amazing. Like more educated than both of us probably combined.
So then we get into our egg donor goes in for her retrieve. Actually, we have to talk about this and the decision that we made.
Mm-hmm.
So midway through the process, our egg donor wrote us a letter basically saying like, hey, this is much harder than I anticipated.
Emotionally. Yeah.
I was not prepared for this. I don't really want to do this anymore. And for that reason, like I sort of undervalued myself and this entire process and asked for more money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just like lazily say, she asked us for more money.
It was a really heartfelt letter.
Right.
And but the agency was really like kind of mortified to send it to us. They said, this is very unusual. You have a contract that your lawyers review. There's a legal agreement. You're not obligated to do this. We're sorry to even send it to you. And we read it. And it was like very human, which is like a person being like, I'm going through this and here's how I'm feeling about it. And I think right away, yeah, she asked for more money and not in the grand scheme of things, not a ton.
Right.
But we, I think both almost immediately wanted to do it because look, again, it's like this really beautiful human thing. And it's also like money changing hands. So those things are constantly clashing.
I just think it's important to highlight like our decision was not made off of dollar amounts and our decision was not made off of what our lawyers were advising us or the doctors were saying or the agencies were saying. It was basically off of the human element of like, we can't imagine what she's going through right now. We are so incredibly thankful to her. And yes, here's the money. Let's keep moving forward.
And it hits everyone differently. We know some people who've done egg donation before. They're like, I would do it 100. It was no big deal. I didn't care, whatever. I mean, the hormones thing I think is intense, but I think for other people, it's like really intense emotionally. Like there's a person that's going to be out there who's half me who I won't know.
Right.
I don't really know these people who are going to be raising that child. Are they going to do a good job? You know? And it's like, it's intense.
Yeah. Well, there's other animals in our animal kingdom that aren't great parents. I mean, some species eat their own. So, I mean, for example, do you know any of the animals that I'm talking about?
I think a lot do it.
Like it's the weakest one. So weird. One, yeah, the weakest one always gets
to get like more nutrition for the surviving. I mean, evolution is
savage.
Yeah.
Savage.
Evolution is savage, but it works. Wait, so then what? So then she goes in for her
egg retrieval.
Yeah.
And we get the call or we log into our portal and we see we have 22 eggs.
Yeah.
And then from there, we split them 11 and 11.
Yep.
We use your sperm on your 11. We use my sperm on my 11. And then we get to track them over 8 days. Was it five?
I think five. But it was also like, it's always everything with us, with our fertility, is like on a Friday. And they're like, well, we don't know over the weekend. So you're like, okay, great. We just found out this really important thing on like Friday at 4 p.m.
And now we have to wait till Monday to get a call. So as we're following in our portal and as lab results are coming back, we're like slowly seeing our embryos get eliminated.
Yeah.
I mean, we see out of our 11, 9 moved on. Then out of that, you know, day by day, they're sort of getting eliminated to like the last day where they need to take 3 more days to mature. And then you get to see how many embryos you have. And do you want to share the end results?
Well, yeah. I mean, so we sent, I think it's like, even from there, it's 2 stages because we sent 8 to genetic testing.
Yeah.
Which I think they're like packed on dry ice or something. I remember they were shipped to like Alabama or something from LA.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't follow that.
And they get genetically tested. And from there, the ones that went into like frozen storage, it was only 3. So 5 didn't really make it. But somebody, I can't remember if it was our doctor or like a friend, explained it to me in a way that felt comforting. They said like, those are the ones that like when a woman is pregnant and has a miscarriage, like that's what it would have been like a miscarriage.
Yeah, which would have been hard on,
yeah,
obviously our surrogate, hard on us. Well,
everyone, yeah. And you just, yeah. So I think it also just underscored like how miraculous life is.
Yeah.
You start out with, you know, this much and you go down this much. And at really, every stage.
It really shows you how like, how much goes into a birth.
And how much has to go right every day to like grow a human inside another human.
Yeah. I'm honored to do it with you.
Same.
All right. So then we get into the process of sitting with our 3 embryos, in which we're keeping to ourselves right now. This is the privacy and boundaries that I've learned. We are protecting, sort of just keeping the gender to ourselves right now. So we have 3 embryos, which grades were I found out, so we have two of the highest grades, and then one was an AB.
Oh.
But all great in, like, the grand scheme of things.
Great.
Like, AB is, like, just one notch down from, like, perfect.
Got it.
From what I've understand. To lining up our surrogate. So I don't know if people know this, but right now in our country, there is a pretty high demand for surrogates, which means there is a line to get in.
Oh, yeah.
We were on the wait list for about 6 months. We, as soon as we started our egg donor contract and going down that road, we actually put our names in for the wait list for our surrogate. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this, because we go through this process, we get matched with one. She's in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And we get all excited. We're like, finally, Vegas will be fun.
Although I kind of was like, I never wanted to have a surrogate that we would have to get on an airplane to go see.
But you take what you can get.
More advice. Like, it was, again, more advice that people were like, you want to be able to get there if something unexpected comes up.
Right. Vegas wasn't the worst for us, though. It's a 45-minute flight, 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we could have gotten through
that. We could have, but I was holding out.
Anyway, it didn't matter because fate worked in our favor, and unfortunately, her BMI was too high by the time they went in for testing and evaluation. Yeah. So we get rematched, and then...
Well, not matched. So that it's different from... So whereas egg donors, you're getting sent any women who are available who meet what sort of the parameters you're looking for. With surrogates, it was different, right? Remember, they would offer us one person at a time, and we had 24 hours to say yes or no.
Yes.
So we had said yes to Vegas, and they're like, she's not available. And then the second one they offered us, she was 4'11". I'm 6'2", you're 6'4".
So we politely...
Baby is not going to be small. Our egg donor was quite tall. I think 5'10", or pretty tall.
Her dad's like 6'4".
So the idea of this baby, it could be a 9 or 10 pound baby. And that just felt kind of mean to do to someone who's 4'11".
You could have broken the vagina.
I think, I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, we said no politely. Yeah. We just said, after reviewing some information, we do not feel like this is a great match.
I think we said, we think she's too small.
And I think they agreed.
Yeah. They were like, yeah, kind of. I think they were like, we didn't notice her height.
Yeah.
And then we found our third time a charm, sweet woman. Nearby. Yeah.
We're very, very excited to have her on board.
Mm-hmm.
We're also very protective over her and privacy wise.
Yeah. But I also, it never occurred to me that it mattered who the surrogate's partner was.
Hmm.
But that's a really important part of it that we learned about, right?
Yeah.
It was like
the husband.
Or, you know, sometimes
the wife. Yeah. If it's a lesbian couple.
Yeah. Or some of them are not married, but like they just have to make sure they have a really good support system.
Right.
That they're not being subjected to physical or emotional abuse.
Yep. They also have to have one proven birth,
right,
which we didn't know.
Yeah. And what else? It was like, yeah. But they do a lot of health testing on the partner of the surrogate.
Mental health screening.
And making sure there's no like STIs and like, other diseases. Cause like theoretically, like, you know, the surrogate is going to be having sex with their partner throughout the pregnancy and like make sure that like the baby is not impacted.
Yeah.
We learned a lot. So then we picked her, and then it was still like forever. Everything
mock
just
took
so long.
Data. Well, it was good to hear Dr. Ringler say they're working on that.
Oh, really?
Because what they found in studies is it discourages people to do this.
Oh yeah.
It's so discouraging the longer you have to wait. But I will say, like, it's been 2 years. We've been on this journey for 2 years.
A year and a half. Right? Wasn't it June 2022?
I'll have to look.
That's the first time we went in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still, a long time.
Yeah.
All right. We'll get back into our story later on another episode.
Okay.
But right now, it wouldn't be a Colton Underwood podcast without a trivia section. Competition.
Who goes first?
Well, you can begin.
Okay, so we're playing a game to test each other's baby knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When should solid foods typically be introduced?
Wait, I can't. Don't. You got to hide it from me or else I'll cheat.
When should solid foods typically be introduced to a baby's diet?
Well, if it was up to Jordan Brown, it would be almost immediately because you want them to teeth. But I will say 4 months.
The answer is around 6 months of age.
6 months?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
That seems about right. Yeah, they're on breast milk for a while.
So 6 months.
Or formula.
So I didn't get it right.
Yeah, it's an X. I'm putting an X.
Okay. Okay, question number one for you. When do babies usually start crawling? You can hit the, there's a range. So okay. As long as you hit a number in that range.
I would say around 10 months.
Yeah, 7 to 10, you barely got it, but you got it.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks. Name three essential items that are typically found in a diaper bag. You have to name three.
Diaper, baby wipe, powder, baby powder.
No, the first two are right, but you can maybe have a couple other guesses to okay. get a third that's on the list.
I'm for sure putting baby powder in our... In our
powder?
Yeah, to powder their bottoms so they don't get diaper rash.
No one does that. I think it's all cream now.
Oh, it's diaper like a, cream.
I mean, probably yes, but I gave you that one. So do you have a third? Diapers, wipes, and what's the third?
A blanket. A bottle.
A bottle would be in there.
Yes.
I was looking for pacifier or changing mat.
Pacifier.
I'm going to give it to you.
Okay, thank you. Here we go. What is the average weight of a newborn baby in pounds? I'm going to give you a range too. I'm going to do a pound below and a pound above. So as long okay. as you're in that.
I would say the average is probably like 6 pounds, 9 ounces.
You're in it. It's 7.5 on the average. So anything from 6.5 to 8.5 would have been right. Good job, babe.
Thanks. Okay. What is
my little Stanford guy?
Okay, what is the purpose of a baby monitor? This is a gimme.
To tell if they're awake? Actually, or if they're crying?
No. I mean...
To hear if they're crying. To, like, help them.
To monitor the baby's activity, sounds, and movements when you're not in the same room.
Avery, we need to talk.
No, he got that one.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. How often is it recommended to burp a newborn after feeding?
Is it a multiple choice?
Nope.
How often or like how many times?
How often is it?
It's like a weird question. Like how many times are you supposed to burp the baby after you feed the baby? Yeah. Twice, three times.
The answer is every 2 to 3 ounces during bottle feeding or when switching breasts during breastfeeding.
I think I got it.
You don't get it.
Yes, I do. That was a...
Nope. I'm not giving it to you.
I got that. Like a few times.
No, I missed one, so you missed one.
What is the importance of tummy time for an infant?
To build the neck muscles.
Partially correct.
To learn...
No. What other muscles?
Oh, the back and the spine and the abs.
The abs? No, it's the neck, shoulder, and arms.
Your baby's going to have abs. True or false? 50-50 chance. Newborns can see colors from birth.
False.
How did you know that?
I've heard it.
Yeah, false. Newborns initially see the world in black and white.
Also, they seem a little bit blind when they're like really new. They're like, they can't really tell.
What are they like?
My first nephew, when he would wake up, would like put his mouth on my nose because he thought it was a bottle. And I'm like, are you good? That's my nose. But it was cute too.
Can't wait for a baby.
True or
latch
false?
Latch onto your nose.
True or false? Babies are born with kneecaps.
False. I think it forms just like the skull is like shaping and forming.
Correct.
Yes.
Babies are born with cartilage in their knees, but the kneecap develops over time.
Amazing.
Are you out?
No, I have one more for you.
Oh, okay. Me too.
Jordan, at what age do most babies start teething?
I mean, I really don't know. 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah. That was the first question on my list, but I didn't give it to you because you opened with the solid food. So I thought you would correlate it to the same thing.
Oh.
You got that right. So you only missed one.
Okay. I have one more for you.
Okay.
What is the average number of diapers a newborn goes through in a day?
In a day?
Mm-hmm.
Newborn. Five?
That's incorrect.
Six?
No.
Seven?
Nope.
Eight?
Yeah, 8 to 12.
What?
Yeah.
It's a lot of diapers you're going to have to change.
Okay, you got 4 out of 6 correct. How many did I get?
4 out of 5.
No, there's, you answered, you weren't, didn't you have 6 for me too?
I only had 5 for you.
Oh, I guess I went first. So, I think I win.
Great.
Whatever. Thanks for having me.
The ride of your life is Eddie Hood.